Sign where it is. Very good. Hi, everybody. It looks like we're ready to go this morning. It's approximately 9 a.m. on February 1st, 2017. Day two in the matter of the application of Powder River Energy Corporation for authority to increase its cost of power adjustment by $18,393,590 per annum to reflect a change in average wholesale power costs. That is docket number 10,014-172-CP-16. I believe we left off yesterday with Mr. Roselli. You were cross-examining Ms. Sorensen. We'll pick up there. Ms. Sorensen, I would remind you that you are still under oath. And I guess before we actually move there, do we have any preliminary business this morning to take care of?
Precor does not.
Nor do joint interviews.
Okay, thank you. And I think I explained earlier, but just to make sure, I will be offering the opportunity for parties to make a closing statement, which you may take advantage of if you'd like. So with that, I will turn the witness over to you, Mr. Roselli.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Ms. Swanson, welcome back, and thank you for coming back for a second day.
Happy to be here.
I want to pick up where we left off yesterday. You may recall we were talking about Exhibit 234.4, presentation that has your name on it. You have that in front of you?
Yes.
Okay.
Page.
Well, we'll get to the page in a minute. I just wanted to clear one thing up. Yesterday, when I was first discussing this with you, you weren't sure when the document was prepared, but then you later recollected. Can you refresh my memory? Am I right in knowing that this was a document that was put together for a presentation to Precor?
Correct.
And some of Precor's members?
Right. It was a customer meeting at which I was on the phone presenting this presentation via WebEx.
Okay. And you understood that Precor and some of its member customers were participating in the meeting?
Yes, I did.
And a copy of this presentation was also provided to Precor, right?
Right, because I was on the phone, it was actually being projected or put on the screen at the Precor office.
At the Precor meeting.
Right.
Because the slides were being physically shared or shown somehow AV-wise on a screen.
Yes.
And this special meeting was on August 5th of 2016?
That sounds about right. I don't remember the exact date, but I do know that it was in the July-August timeframe.
Okay. If I tell you it was August 5th, you don't have any basis to tell me.
To argue with you? No.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
So this would be after the basin rate increase had already gone into effect, right?
Had already gone into effect, correct.
Right. It had been approved and became effective August 1st of 2016, right?
Right. For the 2016 rate.
Fair enough. The 2017 rate hadn't been set yet, or had it?
It had. It's included in this presentation. The approval came, I suppose, if it was August 5th, it would have been approximately a week or two later that it was approved by the Board of Directors.
But because it was a 2017 rate, by definition, it wasn't in effect yet.
Right.
Now, I want to clear something up from our discussion on this whole equity infusion issue from yesterday. And if I get it wrong, I want you to correct me. My understanding is that Basin now believes that no equity infusion to DGC is necessary because Basin was able to negotiate a reduction in the debt covenant requirement that DGC's equity remain at or above $325 million, right?
We went back to those lenders and changed the covenant within the loan agreements to reduce that $325 million to $50 million.
Right.
And we received the waiver for that in December of 2016. Final documents are being drafted by attorneys and will be signed shortly.
Okay, so this reduction in the requirement in your debt instrument to keep DGC's equity at or above $325 million, that happened after this August 5th meeting.
The reduction in the loan agreements,
yes.
You mean? Yes, because we started the negotiations and talking to the lenders that are part of that Berea financing. We talked to them probably starting late fall, early winter.
Okay, so as of August 5th, you had not even initiated those discussions.
We had not initiated those discussions yet. We were exploring different options at that time. If I back my mind up to the August timeframe when this was presented, I believe at that time internally at Basin, we were starting to look at different options of what we could do. One of them included the equity infusion. The other was different alternatives to how to do those equity infusions.
Okay.
If we needed to. And obviously the option that we executed was to change the loan documents so that it wasn't necessary.
Okay, but let me take you back in time to the August 5th meeting. Let's go ahead and if you have that notebook in front of you, I would like you to turn back to page JI0076, base number, or if you're referencing the numbering of the document. It's the same slide we looked at yesterday, DGC equity, page 20 of 44. Are you there with me?
I am here.
So at the time, August 5th, 2016, when this meeting's happening, at that time, Basin believed that a DGC equity infusion was at least potentially necessary, right?
Potentially necessary, but we had it worked into our financial forecast. Keeping in mind, this presentation was done in the beginning of August. But when we compile our, you know, financial forecast process, we're backing up to February. And so by the time you get to a point, even if you would have known or had a suspicion or had alternate options that you were considering, this was in our financial forecast, we wouldn't have had time to take it all out and recalculate everything. So we were far enough along in our process for the financial forecast that it was in our financial forecast. However, I will remind you that when we got to the budget, which gets approved in December, we had already pulled those equity infusions out.
Okay, but I want to stay here in August for now. And I think you said you used the words at that time or if nothing changed. I mean, looking at this slide, what it's showing is absent some other solution, it's representing that this DGC equity infusion is going to be necessary to continue to meet those covenants, right?
That's what we had planned for in the financial forecast, yes.
And that's what you told Precor and Precor's customers at that meeting, right?
That's what we told Precor's customers that we had in the financial forecast. At that time, we did not want to speak with external people about the options that we were already in the process of looking at or negotiating. That was all internal conversations with our attorneys.
Okay. Well, to be fair, if Precor's customers who participated in that meeting, they can only know what you tell them, right?
Yes.
If you have other parallel discussions or thoughts going on, but you don't tell them about it, they can't know that, right? You didn't share.
Do you want me to answer that as a yes or no?
Well, you didn't share the possibility that you were looking at, for instance, negotiating a reduction in the $325 million equity requirement.
That was not something I would have been able to share at that point in time.
What you told them is that there was going to be the rate increase, because they're talking about the rate increase, right? Let's level set this. The fundamental reason you participated in this meeting was to address concerns about the rate increase, right?
I would disagree with that, because those customer meetings, my understanding is we do those every year, and Mr. Easley can probably better speak to that than I can. It was the first time that I've been involved in those customer meetings. And the only reason that I was involved again was because our manager of budgeting and forecasting, who would typically participate in those customer meetings and who had participated in those customer meetings in past years, was because he had other commitments that I stepped in and took over for him. But those customer meetings happen on a regular basis, annually, I believe. And so, it was not just because we had a rate increase that we were coming and discussing.
Fair enough. So they happen regularly. This is the first one you had participated in.
It was the first one I had participated in, yes.
So you don't know if in past meetings, Precor's customers had participated in these meetings?
Precor's customers had participated in those meetings. I do know that. And the deck that we put together for that customer meeting in 2016 was very similar to past decks that had been presented to that same group.
So you've reviewed past decks that were presented to the same group?
Right, that was the template for putting this one together.
Did the past decks, look with me starting here with the slide that we've been looking at, actually turn back one page to the net income slide. Do you you see that we talked about this yesterday, this is a financial forecast for DGC, right?
Right.
And then the next page, and I'm just going to walk you through page by page. The next slide is a DGC equity slide, right?
Right.
And the next slide is the DGC cumulative net income history slide that we looked at together, right?
Yes.
And the next slide covers the DGC dividends that DGC had historically provided to Basin, right?
Correct.
And the next slide talks about the DGC embedded benefits that you work with and quantify in your testimony, right?
Yes.
As does the slide after that, more on the DGC benefits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you looked at these past decks. Did they also have these same slides with regard to DGC?
That I cannot answer without going back and specifically looking at those decks.
So you don't know sitting here today?
I don't know sitting here today.
Would it be fair to say that this particular deck, this presentation, had a DGC emphasis in it?
I don't know if I can say that that's fair or not, because I don't recall. I do know that when we put this deck together, we used past decks as a template for what we were showing at the customer meeting.
Well, you would agree we just looked at seven straight slides that were all about DGC, right?
And I would assume that there were other slides in other decks that focused on DGC as well.
But yours?
We do that with our board. We do that with the MAC. We specifically look at DGC and what's happening.
Okay. But I think your testimony was you don't know if these same slides, this same DGC discussion was in those past decks.
I would say that the slide on page 19, which shows the net income loss after tax for DGC specifically, we would have had a very similar slide to that. What I don't recall is if in the past we have gone through the other slides. Certainly we wouldn't have had the equity slide because that debt was established in 2015. And so there wouldn't have been that covenant to report on in past years.
Fair enough. So I want to turn the page here and back to the meeting, but on a slightly different issue. And I don't want to get hung up in semantics with you about equity infusion or other labels. But would you agree that at that meeting you discussed with Precor and Precor's members who participated in that meeting that the rate increase that Basin had implemented was in part to deal with DGC losses?
To the tune that we had a consolidated margin, that DGC is a part of that consolidated margin. If it was not a high enough margin to achieve our financial metrics and maintain that A category rating with our bond ratings, then yes, we would have had that discussion.
Right, because.
But specifically saying that DGC's losses were X percent of the rate increase, no, we would not have stated it that way.
You wouldn't have put a percentage on it.
We wouldn't have said that specifically the DGC losses are the reason for a rate increase.
But there would have.
That's not true.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But you would have shared a slide going back to page 19 of 44 in the presentation that projects DGC losses of $172 million over the next 4 years, right?
We would have shown this slide, yes.
So aside from the dividends, the DGC dividends to Basin that we discussed yesterday, your pre-filed testimony also discussed what we've been discussing a lot in the hearing, the so-called embedded benefits from DGC to Basin, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I don't use the word embedded, but I think that's a term that's been used in this hearing that I speak to the benefits. Embedded or not is a little bit confusing to me, but
well,
yes.
Let's deal with that issue. And I'm not sure what the right label is myself, but these benefits don't show up on a financial statement. Is that right?
No, because they're integrated into Basin's financial statements.
Maybe they're, I don't know what the right word is. My point is you couldn't go in and zero in and pull them out of a financial statement the same way you could see the hard dollars that are a dividend from DGC to Basin, right?
That would be a true statement, unless you were to deep dive into the general ledger itself.
Okay. Well, even if you did a deep dive into the general ledger, I wouldn't find a number that says this is the DGC benefit to Basin for synergies from sharing coal. There wouldn't be a number that I could say, oh, that's the number in the financial statement.
On the general ledger, no, but it would be used as foundation.
Used, right. I could define the number, but I wouldn't see the number. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Back to that August 5th meeting. is it fair to say that Basin probably anticipated that members, and maybe in particular member customers like our clients, wouldn't be particularly happy about the mid-year rate increase?
Well, I can say for certain that they wouldn't have been particularly happy. I can also tell you that this was not an easy or a decision taken lightly by Basin either. It's not something that we like to do. Rate increases, as Mr. Foss highlighted yesterday, rate increases are painful enough to implement when they're implemented on a normal cycle. It is just god-awful when you're trying to do it in a mid-year rate increase.
So your answer basically is yes, you anticipated there was going to be some resistance, some flack.
Right.
And you probably equally anticipated that some of that unhappiness would zero in on the DGC issue in light of the fact that you had a slide showing required DGC equity infusions of $169 million, right?
Which is why we found it important to highlight that, yes, this slide looks like there are losses that the Basin membership is needing to endure or shoulder. The reason that we started to explain further and to show the detail of the benefits that are coming back that the membership had already taken advantage of, that those were more than offsetting what these losses were. And so I think that was an important piece to explain to them. So if we didn't do our due diligence and simply put something like slide 19 in front of our board or a MAC, we wouldn't be fully explaining the big picture.
I understand. You didn't want customers to get the wrong picture, right?
We wanted the customers to get the right picture.
Okay. I'll accept that. In other words, if, and we can look at the numbers, if you look at the net income loss shown on page 19 of the presentation, JI0075 of exhibit 234.4, you're showing there a $67 million net loss after tax for DGC, right?
Correct.
And your point, and I want to make sure I'm not taking liberties with your point. Your point was, a member would look at that and say, that's a big negative number. You wanted to make sure that members or member customers understood that there are these, I'm going to keep calling them embedded benefits, that are substantial, that more than offset that loss.
That is the message that we wanted to make sure was clear so that wrong conclusions were not drawn.
Right, and it follows in line with the questions. I can't remember who the witness was, but Deputy Chair Russell was essentially putting the same questions to a witness yesterday, that if you have net operating loss of $60 million offset by $90 million in embedded benefits, that's actually a net positive, right?
Right.
Right. But that entirely hinges on the quantification of the embedded benefits at $90 million, right? That's how the math works.
So you're saying that if you have a loss of $60 million.
Let's stick with what we have in 2017, $67 million. That's what you're projecting.
Right. And so, yes, the net benefit, because the net benefit is math. And so you're basically subtracting the net loss from the net from the gross benefit to come and calculate a net benefit. So if the gross benefit is in question, then obviously that would change the math.
Right. And just to make sure we're clear on this, you have a net loss of $67 million and embedded benefits of $90 million. If that $90 million figure is right, you're to the good $23 million, right?
That's how math works, yes.
Right. However, math also works this way, which is that the embedded benefits are worth a much smaller number, say $39 million. Let's just pick $39 million randomly, okay? If $39 million is the number for the embedded benefits and you have a $67 million net income loss, then you still got in total a net loss, right?
Well, I mean, yes, because that's algebra. And so if you're questioning the validity of the $90 million benefit, which seems to be where you're taking me now, I'd be more than happy to walk through the details of how we arrived at that $90 million, all of which are supported by contracts and calculations that have been provided in request.
Well, let's go there, because that is where I'm going to go next, as you correctly anticipated.
Good.
$90 million in net benefits. I think your testimony speaks a little more broadly in a range of 80 to 100 million. Is that fair?
Right, because it changes. That's the average that we look at over that full financial forecast period. So if the numbers change depending on what the financial forecast was.
So the ranges change, but the number stays pretty consistent in that $80 to $100 million of embedded benefits?
The ranges change. The range is the change in each of the years, depending on what was happening in any particular year financial forecast.
Turn with me to page 23 of this same exhibit, page 23 of 44 of the exhibit. 34.4. I want to make sure I'm understanding. It should say DGC benefits there.
Right.
And I take it what this is telling me is that the number, the projection of these embedded benefits for 2017 was $88,196,000, am I right?
In 2017, that was the benefit back to basin members that we had calculated.
As projected, hasn't happened yet, as projected, right?
Right, based on our financial forecast.
Right, and then the projection for 2018 is $94,993,000.
Again, based on the financial forecast, that was our estimate.
And I just want to make sure I'm understanding the numbers. The point I'm leading up to is that number moves in the range, in the band we just talked about, over essentially a 10-year forecast between 80 million and 100 million in embedded benefits.
Right, because that range is taking your lowest year and your highest year and saying each of those years falls somewhere within that range.
I understand, I'm with you. My point is there's not $167 million entry on this slide, right?
$167 million?
I'm just making that number up. There's I'm just trying to get out the point, and I think we're agreeing, but we might be talking past each other, that the numbers, these benefits are all depicted for 10 straight years as between 80 million and 100 million, right?
Right.
There's not a year where the net benefit shows as 160 million, right?
There is not a year on here where that blue bar has a number on it that would say 160 million.
And there's not a number where it says 60 million either, right?
No.
Okay. Now, so this graph starts in 2017, right?
This graph starts in 2017 and goes through 2026.
Okay. And would you agree that it represents a fairly persistent and constant benefit from DGC to basin?
I would tell you that the way that the numbers that we arrived at here were based on calculations that were based on the numbers that we had flowing through our financial forecast.
Okay.
And so if persistent is the word and consistent, then yes, these exist in every year as they're depicted by each of the bars in any given year.
Right. My only point is they're not moving wildly up and down year to year, are they?
No, they are not.
And if I graph these backwards, if I look back to 2016, would you expect that the benefits number from DGC to basin would also be between 80 million and 100 million?
I haven't done the calculation for 2016. I would say that we would be somewhere in a similar range, yes.
Because you're in that range, at least on a projected basis, for 10 straight years, as this slide shows, right?
Right.
So you don't have any reason to believe that that benefit would be lesser, an altogether different number in 2010.
Mr. Roselli, I have to say that you're beginning to... My mind is beginning to think about the Falcons or something like that. Where are we going with this?
Well,
repeated it several times, and I've listened, but I'm
okay. I'll move along. I'm just trying to get out that these numbers are constant year to year to year to year. That they're not moving up, down. They're not changing.
I think she's agreed to what I've shown the and
I'll
not going back and past. This it is what it is.
Duly noted. I'll move on. Now this presentation. And the quantification of the benefits, who did that?
Me and my analytics team.
Okay, so Basin did it.
Correct.
Okay. And there was a question yesterday put to Mr. Foss. You would agree that Basin's financial statements are audited, right?
Basin's financial statements are audited. DGC's financial statements are audited separately. Dakota Coal's financial statements are audited separately, as are Souris Valley Pipeline statements audited separately.
But nobody has ever audited the quantification of these embedded benefits, right?
Auditing them is a stretch. We have not hired an outside consultant to do this calculation, if that's where your question is leading.
Well, this is solely a determination or calculation that was done by Basin, right?
this calculation was done internally by Basin and an analytics team on Basin staff.
And it was done by Basin at a time when it was important from Basin's perspective that Basin's members and customers of Basin's members understand the fullness of the benefits that DGC provides to Basin.
We have done this study in the past where we have looked at the benefits coming back to the membership from DGC several times in the past. The difference between this analysis and the analysis we've done in the past is in the past, we've always looked backwards and said, you know, as of today, this is how we look at the benefits coming back to Basin from DGC. We have never applied the methodology using our financial forecast going forward to show what the benefits in the financial forecast have been. That was a new project that we were assigned this year, or in 2016.
Okay. I would like to now turn the page and go to those specific cumulative benefits. And I'd like to go with you to your testimony at, and I believe it's exhibit 5. And I'd like to take you to page 14 of the testimony.
So I'm going into two places, right? I'm going to an exhibit and I'm going to my testimony.
There is a notebook that says Powder River Energy Corporation's exhibits. Or maybe you have it separately or something, but I basically just wanted to ask you about your testimony.
What's the exhibit number?
It's exhibit 5. And I'm at the very bottom. I want to take you to page 14 of that testimony, please. Are you with me there on page 14?
I am on page 14, yes.
Okay, and the sentence at the very bottom says, the following benefits to Basin provided by DGC have been quantified. This is the quantification, that you and your team did, right?
Correct.
So I want to talk about some of the benefits. I don't want to hit them all, but I want to hit the highlights of some of these embedded benefits that you talk about in your testimony, okay?
Okay.
And Mr. Foss touched on a number of these yesterday, right?
Yes, he did.
Okay. So there's four in particular I want to talk about. First, there's what I'll call the coal production synergies or economies of scale.
Right.
Okay. And the notion there, I'm going to be at a simple level. The notion there is both Basin and Dakota Gas need coal, and they get it from the same source, Dakota Coal Company, right?
That's where the contract for the coal
so
provided to the North Dakota facilities, yes.
So they can share costs in that way. It's cheaper for two to buy from the same entity, essentially.
Right, because you have volume, additional volume. You have fixed costs that your numerator does not change. Your denominator is your tonnage that you're drawing from the mine, and the higher that denominator is, the lower your cost is.
You're spreading the fixed cost between two entities.
Three.
Fair enough. And you quantified that number at $33 million, right?
I did.
Okay.
And I quantified that number based on interviews and analysis done by our coal mine engineers at the coal mine. At the Coteau mine, C-O-T-E-A-U.
Now, you were here yesterday again when Mr. Foss testified, and you heard him testify that these coal synergies related to production of coal, fuel, whatever you want to call it, existed even before Basin acquired Great Plains Synfuel, right?
I'm not familiar with the contract back at the time. Mr. Foss was intricately involved in those contracts. What I do know is that the coal that is coming to DGC is coming from the same source as ABS and LOS.
So even if DGC were not an affiliated entity with Basin, they could still enjoy these coal synergies, couldn't they?
Well, that would depend on who is operating it and if it were operating. So if it were operating and the contract continued to exist as it is today with Dakota Coal providing that coal to the Dakota Gasification Company under the same terms of the contract, then that would be a true statement. Sure. However, what we feel is there's probably not somebody who's going to operate the coal contract, operate DGC under that identical terms.
Okay, and I'm not suggesting that there is such an entity. My point is solely that they share these benefits, these coal synergies, by virtue of the fact that you have Dakota Gas and Basin with the Antelope Valley Station in the same backyard, sharing the fixed costs. They're able to share the cost because of their geographic proximity, right?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
So the way that the Coteau mine operates is Basin basically funds all the capital needs and the operating needs of the Coteau mine. So if DGC were not an affiliated company, then Basin would not be in a position where we would be willing to fund the mining operations to provide coal to a third party. And so if DGC were not a related party, and they were operated by a third party, even if they had a contract, we would not be, as Basin, financing the operating and equipment needs of the coal mine for a third party for free.
So you might, I think you're saying part of the savings might drop out of the equation. Basin would still need coal, right?
Basin would still need coal.
And Basin would still have every incentive to share the fixed cost of getting that coal with any entity that it could, right?
But the only way that that works is if it's an affiliated company.
Well, then how was Basin able to share these coal costs and enjoy these economies of scale and coal synergies when Great Plains Synfuel was not a related entity to Basin?
I'm not familiar with that. I was still learning to tie my shoes at the time.
Well, you did hear Mr. Foss testify that those benefits existed even before Basin acquired DGC. Did you not hear that?
I heard him say that, yes. And I can only attest that his testimony, I trust him.
Okay, fair enough. Power is another one. Basin provides power to DGC, right?
Basin provides power from DGC through shared transmission services and the proximity of our Antelope Valley Station to DGC.
And Basin has always provided power to DGC, right?
That's my understanding.
And Basin provided power to the Great Plains Synfuel plant before there ever was a DGC, right?
That is my understanding as well, yes.
So again, Basin doesn't need to own DGC to provide power to DGC, does it?
Okay, so let me clarify something here, because I think, and in Mr. Foss's testimony yesterday too, this was the question and the responses. When we calculated these benefits, assuming DGC was not operating. So if DGC were not operating, then these benefits would be no longer available to Basin. Now, if you were to assume that a third party stepped into Basin's shoes or DGC's shoes and continued to operate, yes, some of these benefits would continue to come back to Basin in the form of coal contracts and sales, assuming that those contracts continued on. Where the defensive move came in when we acquired DGC, and this is where Mr. Foss's testimony went yesterday, is it was a defensive move because the continued operations of DGC are what are critical to the ongoing benefits back to the membership. And we were able to control that by purchasing it. And so if we were to sell to a third party, we would not be able to mandate that they continue to operate Dakota Gasification as it's operated today. And so we want to remain in control of those benefits, and we want to remain in control of the operations of DGC.
Let me make sure I'm following you. I think what you're telling me is the benefits exist because DGC continues to exist and is operational.
Correct.
And that might not be the case if there were a different ownership group.
Right.
But
because those synergies wouldn't necessarily exist for a third-party operator.
Okay. But back to the fundamental point you were making, I think you said defensive move, and you used that same word in your testimony, right?
Right.
And so the notion was we need to preserve these benefits, right?
Preserve the benefits that we are getting from DGC continuing to operate as is.
Right. So because you were preserving the benefits, by definition, they already existed, right?
Right.
That's what preserve means, right?
And again, I don't know that these benefits as calculated are not saying if DGC was not owned by Basin, would they go away? What they're saying is if DGC were not operating, they would go away.
No, I'm with you. If DGC ceased operations, we would lose these benefits as we've calculated.
The membership would lose, as their customers would also that are coming from the synergies between DGC and Basin.
Okay, so if a different entity owned DGC and DGC stayed operational, you'd still enjoy those benefits.
Right? Mr. Ozzelli, yes. I believe you've asked that question.
So okay. All right. My apologies.
I'm just thinking about how we're going to progress today, and it wasn't my anticipation we're going to spend a whole hour on cross, but I do want you to be able to develop your cross-examination, but bear in mind that we are trying to complete this today.
I appreciate that, and I'm actually moving towards my conclusion.
Thank you.
Which we'll be happy to know.
Thank you.
As you all may be happy to know. So I really just want to ask one question, and now I think we've reached the point where there is a confidential document, and I've tried to limit this so we deal with confidentiality once and only once. So
moving
I don't
into
know.
Confidentiality what, now, is that?
Pardon me?
Are we moving into a confidential session?
Yes.
All right. Let's just go off the record for a second while we get that sorted out. How many folks do we have on the phone right now?
We have two callers on the phone right now.
And they originate from, do you know?
Gillette and South Dakota.
Okay, would that be Precor folks to you?
Not to my knowledge.
Who do we have on the phone, if I may ask? This is John Burbridge, the presiding officer. Just fair warning, if you are not identifying yourself for the confidential testimony, we will be muting your ability to hear this conversation.
Excuse me, I did my mute off. My name is John Lee. I'm the CEO of Butte Electric Cooperative in Butte Electric in Newell, South Dakota. I apologize.
And then who else is on the phone?
Steve, St. Clair, Cloud Peak Energy.
Okay, so Steve Sinclair, I believe, would be appropriate to have on the phone. Mr. Beulah, that sounds like...
I'm not sure he would be appropriate.
That's what I was just going to say. Mr. Beulah, I think that we will go ahead and mute your ability to hear what's going on during the confidential session. And when we are completed with that, we will unmute. And we don't have anybody in the room that... Glad to...
Well, we may have some members who have not signed the NDA. Jerry, did you say?
I believe, I think we can clarify this. I believe the testimony that Mr. Ozzelli is going to get into is confidential from Basin's end, in which case there wouldn't be a concern about anyone in the room who checked with Basin on that. It would only be the streaming in the phone that we were concerned about.
Yeah, let's. If somebody in this room hasn't been a part of the protective order, I would ask them to leave. We can go ahead and turn off the streaming.
Nice.